Okay. The time has come. First, I want to thank the committee for asking me to come and speak, share my experience, strength, and hope. It's been a while since I spoke, so y'all just say a little prayer that it will come the way it's supposed to. Thank you so much for the beautiful basket. It was just full of goodies, and it was just beautiful. It was a really nice surprise to have something. The lady gave it to us when we checked into the hotel, so we appreciate that thoughtfulness. I'm sure Jerry will share that too, but I'm talking about myself because this is my program of Al-Anon, and so that's why I need to say all those things on behalf of myself. 10 years ago, when Jerry and I were here, I got up. My first thing after thanking the committee probably was that I felt like I was going to be sick. I feel that way today, too. But I also said that I qualify for this program because my husband's in recovery. I have a stepson who is in recovery for both of them for many years. And I have a 3-year-old grandson. That was 10 years ago. I'm thankful to say my husband's still in recovery. My stepson is still in recovery. And now that 3-year-old is 13. So I'm now anticipating and need the program more than ever with the years going forward because we don't know. At three, he wanted 3 pacifiers, one in his mouth and one in each hand. That was like the beginning of the concern, but he's growing up now, he's become a good young man, and he loves baseball, and we'll just see, we can only take it one day at a time, and I just pray that he'll grow up, and he's probably going to go one way or the other. He's either going to go with his grand-grad, as he calls him, and his father, or he may go with Nene, I hope. I'll get started on what I'm here for, to tell you what it was like and what it's like now. I grew up in Kennesaw, Georgia, and I have to say, Helen grew up in Kennesaw, and we both went to the same grammar school, so it's good to see her. Before I say anything else, we've loved Julie for a long time and Steve, and we've gone and heard her speak, and I always would say, Julie, don't get so nervous. I mean, it's no big deal. So payback is hell because here I am in that situation. But I grew up in Kennesaw, Georgia. I'm the middle of 5 kids. My home was a teetotaler's home, too. My parents were very hardworking people, and we went to church on Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. My daddy was a deacon of the church. And that was a good home to grow up in. But as I got into my teens, I just figured there was more out there, And so when I got my driver's license, I wanted to go where the boys were. If you ever heard Connie Francis sing Where the Boys Are, so I went to Ackworth. Kennesaw was little and there wasn't as many boys. I won't even say they were boys, but they were young men, and we were fascinated with them, my friends. And they drove around back and forth in Ackworth and drank beer. And I had never been around people drinking beer, And these guys thought they were so cool. They'd say, we're going to cut butt for the hut and shake it easy. Those are just really fascinating things when you're 16. And one of those people was Jerry, but I didn't have my eyes focused on him. I had another alcoholic in mind. And I went in that direction for a while, but it didn't work out with me and him, which I guess that was not the plan at the time. But I went through high school, and a guy that I went to high school with came home from the Marine Corps, and we started seeing each other. And of course, there was alcoholism in his home, and he was an alcoholic. Of course, I'm not supposed to call him an alcoholic, but if he walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, he's a duck. So anyway, after about a year and a half, we decided to get married. And he was still in the service when we got married, and we had it wasn't a real big wedding, but of course, you know, me, a pre-Al-Anon, I had all these ideas of how life was going to be. We were going to get that little house in Kennesaw, and we were going to have a white picket fence and two kids, and everything was going to be wonderful. And when we got married, he wore his dress blues, and he looked, oh, it was just beautiful, you know, wonderful. And I just thought that's the way it was going to be, but right away, it did not come out that way. He did have a drinking problem. We moved to Jacksonville, North Carolina, to the Marine Corps base, and he drank too much. And I had never been in that. I knew he drank when we got, you know, when I dated him and got married, but I didn't know excessive drinking. 'Cause until you live with somebody, you really don't know how that is. So of course, we were involved with couples in the Marine Corps, and a lot of them drank too much. But I thought once we got out of the Marine Corps and came home, things would be better. But the day that I got married, my dad, standing outside the church, he said, "You can change your mind now if you want to. You know, you still have a chance to change your mind," because he was not totally happy about us getting married. And I said, "No, Daddy, I couldn't do that now. I'm in this wedding dress and everything. We got the cake, and he's in his dress blues." But my dad told me before that, he said, "You know, y'all are from totally different backgrounds, and I just don't know how you're going to be able to live in that, you know, the way he was raised." And so we did get out of the Marine Corps, and we came home, and he started going to school at night, and things were not that good because he did drink. He did drink too much. And we bought a house. We started out in a mobile home in my daddy's pasture. And there was cows and bulls in the pasture, and driveway it was fixed so they couldn't cross over the, you know, so they couldn't get out. So you could get up one morning and there'd be a bull like right there, you know, in your front door. But we did move into a house, and he started that situation of not coming home. He would go to school after work. He worked for Atlanta Gas and Light in Atlanta, and he just wouldn't come home at the appropriate time. And I, of course, fixed a nice meal, and I waited for him to come home. And sometimes it sat in the oven way too long, and I became the martyr of the fact that he was just not living up to what I expected him to be. And of course, it was a bad situation for several months. We were married 3.5 years, so it wasn't a very long time. He also had a little issue with not realizing that once you get married, you should not date. And so we had to, finally that marriage had to end. And my mother told me, I was devastated, more devastated because my parents did not believe in divorce. And I was devastated that I had came up to their standards of what they expected. I disappointed them as far as I was concerned. And not so much as that I wasn't going to be married to him anymore, because it wasn't so much fun, you know. So I was glad to be away from it. But my mother did say to me, you know, not all marriages are made in heaven. So I kept that in the back of my mind for further use, you know, for use in the future. But I got a divorce, and right back, you know, like they say, you get right back up on the horse. I got right back out there. And, of course, the place that you don't want to go if you don't want to find find another person that drinks too much is a bar. And two of my friends said, "Well, let's go down to this place near the airport." It was a big lounge. And so we went, and I walked in, and this guy came over, very nice looking, you know, guy, tall guy, blue eyes, you know, all those things that you think you want. And he said, "Can I buy you a drink?" Well, I was never a drinker, even in those days of chasing those guys in Ackworth. But I sat down, and I should have got an idea right then, because every time he ordered himself a drink, he ordered me a drink. And by the end of the evening, I had like 10 drinks lined up in front of me because I could not, you know, I couldn't drink them. It makes me feel like I'm not in control if I drink, you know. I'm just I can't get that. I don't want that feeling. So anyway, I proceeded to start seeing this guy. It was way too soon. It was a rebound situation. But he was older than me, quite a bit older than me. And so I was like 25 and he was like 40, but I didn't know he was 40. He didn't look 40. I didn't really know what 40 looked like, but he didn't look 40. But he was a professional man, and he had, you know, he made a lot of money, and it was very impressive to me. And he made me feel really good because I felt like there was something wrong with me that my husband, my ex-husband, did the things he did. And I did not understand about the disease that took him that in that direction. I thought it was me that caused him to not come home at night. So we went out for about a year, and he was transferred to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and asked me if I wanted to go. Now, he did not ask me to marry him. He had never been married. He was a real playboy. Excuse me. And so I went. I did not tell my parents that I was going to live with him. I'm just ashamed to even say it now, you know. But we did. We lived together for like 5 years. And my parents, you know, I don't know if they knew. He didn't really have anything to do with them. I came home twice a year. I love my parents, and I would never have wanted to hurt them that way, because the divorce was bad enough, but to live in sin was not, you know, that wasn't acceptable. So I would say to him, and this is, you know, unbelievable, and I knew he drank, you know, I knew he had a drinking problem. I would say, and I wanted to get married. Now, I wanted to marry this man, and he had a problem. And but I thought, you know, if we got married, maybe he would do better. Maybe that was the, you know. So I would say to him, you know, I'm not going to give you the opportunity to just, you know, if you don't marry me soon, then when I decide I'm going to go, if you wanted to marry me, I'm not going to marry you then. You know, I conjured this up in my mind. I said this for 5 years. And so finally he did, in a way, say, "Do you want to go get married?" And we went to Las Vegas, and it was a real experience. He had had too much to drink. He wore sunglasses in the wedding, and this cab driver was our, the best man or the witness. It was not a marriage made in heaven. As my mama said to me, that was a thought. It was not one of those marriages made in heaven. But we, after we got married, he decided he wanted to move on his boat. He had like a 38-foot Egg Harbor cruiser. So I went along with the situation. We left our jobs and moved to Indiantown, Florida, which is a teeny little place Lake Okeechobee. And I would go back and forth to Fort Lauderdale to work because I was 30 years old, and I wasn't ready to retire. He wasn't really old enough to retire either, but anyway, I would go there on Monday and come back on Friday, and I would stop at the Publix on my way back and pick up like 3 cases of beer and a gallon of either vodka or gin or whatever. He drank martinis, you know, very classy drink. And But I didn't want him to drink. I enabled him to, by bringing those things to him, and that was just so sick. You know, we think the alcoholic has issues, but that was just so sick. So finally I decided I did not want to live like that anymore, so I told him I was moving back to Atlanta, you know, and so he sold the big boat, and we moved to Okeechobee to a house, and he had a smaller boat. But, you know, that was just that geographical cure that I thought was going to help, but it didn't change anything. And at the end of that relationship, I've heard a lot of Al-Anon speakers say different things about how they would like to get rid of their alcoholic one way or the other. But I would, not saying that I wanted him to die, I would never pray for somebody to die, but I just prayed for him not to wake up in the morning. So for every night I would, you know, say, God, you know, and I had no reason to not walk away from that situation. I was self-supporting. I had no children. There was no reason for me to stay except for my self-esteem was so low. I was so beat down that I just did not have the courage to do it. So I was always looking for signs. You know, signs are important to me, at least. And I had gone to visit my parents, and I had talked to this lady about a job in Marietta. But I didn't go to see her. I was supposed to go for an interview because I just could not make that change. And I went back to Florida, and I was laying there praying in the morning. I think he might already got up. I was in a different bedroom that, you know, was he waking up? I hope he wasn't waking up. And the phone rang. And it was a lady from Marietta, from an insurance agency. And she said, Jeanette, you didn't come in to see me when you were in town. And I said, I know, I'm sorry. I said, well, she said, you've got the job if you want it. And I thought, well, that's my sign. You know, God's saying me to go back, you know, to Marietta. So I told him. And, of course, oh, Lord, you know, he was just devastated. All those years, you see, I thought that he was the strong one, and I was just, you know, so dependent on him and so fearful of something happening. But at the end, it was really me that had more of the strength. So I moved back. My younger sister, we've been married a few times between the two of us. And so when one of us is getting a divorce, the other one's, you know, got married. So there's always a place to live, you know, an empty house. So she was getting married. So I moved into her townhouse. I went to work. But, you know, for the 1 year, and Jerry just always laughs his head off, and everybody has their little issues, but I called that man every single night for 1 year. I paid for the call to see how he was doing, you know, because I was so, insecure and felt so responsible. I don't know. I can't tell you why I did it, but I'm the one that had to pay the phone bill, and, you know, he never really asked me to come back, but he just made me feel so guilty, you know. But finally, I got a divorce, in 1991. I came back in 89, the end of 89. Had decided that, you know, this was two marriages, and I just did not think I wanted to go through that again. And I certainly was not going to find anybody that had a drinking problem, you know, or meet anybody that had a drinking problem. I did not want that. I had learned a little something. This is pre-Al-Anon, but I had figured out that things were not going well when you got involved with somebody that had a drinking problem. But I worked, and I took care of my parents. I had been gone for 15 years, and so I enjoyed being with them, and I was only home permanently for, about 3 years when my dad got very sick. And, you know, I said at the beginning that I was raised in a very religious home. I was raised in the God will get you kind of situation. That's what I thought. But when my dad got really ill we knew he was dying, I started praying. I didn't know about or I didn't understand about God's will. I learned that after I came to the Al-Anon, but I started praying, of course, that he would live, and he was in very bad shape, and he did pass away, and I started being more concerned taking care of my mother, and I don't think I said when I first started talking that I am a grateful member of the program of Al-Anon and Alateen Worldwide Program, but that this is where I came, when I get to the point where I came to Al-Anon. I went to a get-together in 1995. My friend called me and wanted to know if I wanted to go to a get-together at Acworth Beach. So I reluctantly said I would, and I took me a little bottle of wine just to kind of make me, you know, relax for the evening. And her husband was doing the driving. Anyway, I went to the get-together, and there was several classes of people from North Cobb High School. That's where we went to high school. And Jerry was there, and I talked to him a little bit. I had ran into him a few years before, about 92, I think, after we were both divorced, at our good friend's, his good friend and my friend's daughter got married. And I went over to him and tried to talk to him, but he was just not very receptive, you know. I walked away thinking, boy, he is like, you know. So anyway, he was there that night, and he asked me to slow dance. And I like to dance, and so we slow danced, and then I danced with a lot of guys. There was some other single men there from Acworth that were the ones that rode up and down the road. You know, you would have thought, I would have thought back then, those guys live with their parents' home, and they rode up and down the road drinking beer. Now, is this what I was expecting to get for a husband? But yes, at that time. But they all got better when they grew up. But anyway, I talked to him briefly, but at the end of the night, he left, and we went out to have breakfast somewhere, I don't know. But the next day he called me and left a message, and I called him back. I had gone to church. It was on a Sunday, and I'd gone to church, and I was with my parents, or my mother, actually. And so I called him back, and I really didn't know that he was such a talker, because the guy I liked way back then was not very personable, you know. Maybe after he had a lot to drink, he would be a lot more fun, but he was not a very, but Jerry was. But I asked my friend Beth, I said, you know, I don't really know that much about Jerry. Well, she did say he was in AA. And I said, oh, okay. I didn't really know that much about AA, but I did have a friend when I lived in Fort Lauderdale that her husband had a bad drinking problem, just as mine did, but yet I didn't see it as much. And she started going to Al-Anon, and we would go out to eat sometimes, and she would share with me. And I could relate. The bell didn't go off, but I could relate with her that I was living in the throes of alcoholism also. But I said, you know, I don't know anything about Jerry. And she said, well, he likes to go and do, but sometimes he can be an ass. I said, okay. Well, I like to go and do. So anyway, we have gone and done for 22 years. But the other part, you know, I won't really, you know, make any comment on. But anyway, we started going out, and we went out for about a year, almost a year and a half. But my sister, that I said, she had gotten a divorce again already, and was she was dating somebody to get married, and her guy had already asked her to marry him. And Jerry and I had been seeing each other longer than her. And I thought, you know, but he did. We took my mother for a Valentine's Day dinner. He was very good to be understanding with my mother, the times that I needed to and wanted to spend with her. But we came back to my family home I'd grown up in, and my mom, I'll see it to this day, my mama was sitting over in her rocking chair, and he got up and went over to her and asked her, could would she share me with him because he wanted to marry me. And I was, you know, I thought he would probably do like my previous, say, you know, do you want to get married? Not any, but he came over to me and got down on his knee and said, and asked me to marry him. And I said yes. So we had a nice, I had had a nice church wedding with my first marriage, like I said, but we had a wedding at the, used to be the church in Kennesaw, the Methodist church. It was a wedding chapel at the time. So we had about 100 people, my family, and we had a lot of Al-Anons and AAs and a lot of our friends from way back that were still out there drinking and partying. So it was a big, it was a real mixture of people, you know. My sister-in-law made us a beautiful wedding cake, and you know, it was just a very, my sister-in-law was my maid of honor. My sister had been the, my younger sister had been the first time, and Jerry's brother was his best man, and of course his son and our daughter-in-law were there, and it was just a very magical, sweet time, you know. And so then we proceeded to go on our journey. But I will tell you, in 1995, after Jerry and I met, he suggested to me that I might want to go to Al-Anon. He did not, you know, he just said, I knew he was in AA, and he was very active. He'd been sober for 10 years. And so I had finally found me that alcoholic that was all the things and in recovery. So, and he asked me to begin with, you know, what is it you like about alcoholics? And I said, well, at first they're lots of fun, you know, to begin with. But anyway, he suggested I go to Al-Anon, and that was in 1995, and I went to my first meeting. It was in November. I can't tell you the exact date, like some alcoholics can say the day, you know, that they took their first drink, but I do know that I took my step of not being so crazy about everything when I, in 1995. My first meeting was just one person, another lady. She'd been in the program a long time, and she tried to share as much as she could about the program. So every Friday night, we would, and I, being a people pleaser, I did want to be a part of, you know, Jerry was very involved, so we started going to the meeting every Friday night at the church in Cartersville. And I didn't really, first of all, I wasn't sure, did I really want to be there? I mean, I knew I needed to be there, and I knew I qualified to be there, but as time went on, I got into service work, you know, putting out the literature. Jerry likes to get anywhere early. He likes to be there early and stay late. That's his motto. Show up early. So we would get there before everybody else, and I would put the literature out and, you know, get everything set up. And then I, of course, took the responsibility of being the GR, started doing service work, and my life got better. I got better about not being involved with other people's issues, not taking on responsibility that I didn't have to take on. My family started seeing that there had been a change in me. Somehow they didn't like, because I did a lot of stuff that they didn't want to do, and I took on that responsibility. And when I started saying no, that didn't, you know, it didn't sit very well with them. But even in my job, you know, in my workplace, I started using a lot of Al-Anon terms that they were not familiar with to help them with situations without being that involved with it. You know, I would say, well, you know, you might just want to let go and let God, and, you know, take it easy, you know, about what you're doing. And so they thought I was just an astounding person that came up with all that stuff. So it helped me there, because I had always been the one that just jumped in and did stuff and got involved in people's problems, and I learned to not do that. This program told me that I didn't have to do that, that as we say, it was not, I didn't have a dog in that fight. I didn't need to get myself involved in things that I was not, that I shouldn't be involved in. But I continued to go to meetings, and we would have a large crowd sometimes, as you all know, and then sometimes it would dwindle down to, you know, three or four people. And but I did understand from the beginning it only took two people to have a meeting, so I continued to go to the meetings, and I would tell people that would come in. You see people come in, their lives are just a shamble, but as soon as things get better, they stop coming. And I would say to them, you know, you don't graduate from this program. If you want to keep that peace and serenity, you got to keep coming. But and a lot of them did come and stay, but most people were in and out. But I can't remember exactly what year, because I've had a lot of things go on, but they needed a meeting in Acworth, the meeting that Julie goes to, and Jerry suggested that I start a meeting there. It was right there at our house. So I fixed up all the literature, and I started going and sitting in the room by myself and trying to let people know. It was unbelievable. There was in the room over here with the AAs, there was maybe 50, 60 people. No Al-Anons. And so I thought, you know, this is just ridiculous. Now, some alcoholics do not want their spouses to come to Al-Anon because they learn a new way of life that may not appeal to them. So, and I realized that. But finally, Eddie started coming, and he would sit with me, and we would have a mini meeting, and, you know. And as time went on, we started having more people come. Now I think that meeting is about 30, 35 people on a Monday night. I stopped going. I started having health issues, and I stopped going, but the meeting continued. It didn't need me to, even though to begin with I thought, you know, I was like the person that started the meeting. But but anyway, and I'm very thankful that it did. And a lot of men started coming, and that was a real blessing to have men that felt like they could come and be a part of the meeting, because for some reason, for a long time, I think it was more ladies, and men did not feel like they had a place. And in fact, when Eddie started coming to the meeting in Cartersville to begin with, he said he had like 12 ladies, and he sat on one end, and they were on the other. And we had a lot of older ladies at that time that sometimes did not have the best outlook on the, you know, on the alcoholic and the whole thing. They came to the meeting, but I won't mention exactly the word that some of them, you might describe them as. But anyway, Eddie was a good addition to it. And sometimes other, men would show up, but it was in Acworth at that Monday night meeting. Four, five, six, seven men would come, and that was good. Sometimes more men than ladies. And then Eddie started a meeting on Tuesday night, which is now my home group. I went to Cartersville all those years with Jerry, and a lot of times I carried the group, because it takes sometimes one person that will keep it going. And it was the oldest Al-Anon meeting in Cartersville. But when Jerry decided he wanted to move to Acworth, to a meeting down there on Tuesday night, I decided that I would go with him. And so I left my home group after all those years and came to Acworth. And a very good friend of mine is the GR there. We went to high school together. I remember the night I was in a meeting, and I saw her across the room. She doesn't have the best memory. Not like I've always had a pretty good memory, but I saw her across the room. Our ex-husbands were big buddies for doing all those, you know, not very good things. So anyway, she after the meeting, I went over to her, and of course she was glad to see me. But I mean, sometimes people, if you know them and you approach them, and you know, we have anonymity, but if they're new in the meeting, they may not really trust that. But so she was a little bit apprehensive, but, you know, she knew after a while that I wasn't going to go telling everybody that she was coming to Al-Anon, which I'm very proud that she came, and she's just had an unbelievable growth. You know, it's so wonderful to see somebody change so much, you know, by getting in the program. And her daughter brought her. Her daughter lives in New York, and she has been going to Al-Anon for years and suggested that her mother go. So it's, you get here in all different ways. But anyway, in the past 10 years, a lot of things have occurred in my life. I've continued to be, you know, active in the program, and I also have had many surgeries. I've had a lot of back surgeries, foot surgery, neck surgery, all kinds of stuff. Jerry's just been a really great person to hang in there with me and all those things that have happened. But in 2000, I think it was about 2011, I was at Assembly in Macon, or it really wasn't in Macon then, I think it was in Forsyth. They showed a film about the 2013 International Convention in Vancouver, and it was beautiful. And Jerry had saved, and we'd gone to Hawaii, and we've gone a lot of places, believe me, just about every state in the United States, and gone to two AA conventions in Canada. And I went home. I came home, and I told him he was saving to go to Alaska. And I said, "Gosh, you know, this just looks beautiful, and I would love to go, but you know, it was quite expensive to go to Vancouver." And so probably the next year, he said, "You know, if you want to go, we'll go. You've gone to my international convention, so we'll go to this one." And so in 2013, we went to Vancouver. We flew into Seattle, and we rented a car, and we drove to Vancouver, and it was just beautiful. It was planes, air, water, you know, coming in on the water, and big boats, and it was very close to Alaska, you know, not too far. So we had to call that our Alaska trip. But anyway, it was really a beautiful time. We went up to Whistler, and seeing everybody come in, the international, you know, everybody from all over the world come in on the night that everybody came in and walked with their flags. And Renelle, my friend Renelle, was one of the ones that, you know, was representing Georgia. And they asked Jerry, because he was an AA, and I guess, you know, there was quite a few AAs there, but they asked him to moderate a three people speaking one morning. But it was just, we went to Victoria and went to a bed and breakfast. Not really my thing, but, you know, I'm glad I got to say I went to a bed and breakfast. But anyway, it was a beautiful time. And, you know, I may not ever get to go to another one, but I'm glad to say that I went to an Al-Anon International Convention. And they had speakers from all over. And it was just a really good fellowship there. And Jerry and I enjoyed it immensely. Anyway, we came back, and that was around July 4th, and in August, of course, Altoona Roundup, which happens every year, and this is the 40th year, so whoever can come, please come. When I was thanking the committee, we've worked on the committee many years, Jerry and I have, and it's a labor of love, because you know, you enjoy all the stuff that comes from it, and the people that enjoy being, you know, coming to the roundup. But it's a lot of work for the people that have to put it together. It doesn't just happen, you know. But anyway, we came home, and I wasn't feeling that well. I have rheumatoid arthritis, and for some reason, makes you feel sometimes like you have the flu. So I kind of didn't feel good. But we went through the roundup, and a few weeks after that, I went to the doctor a couple of weeks. I was running a fever, and I thought I had an ear infection or a sinus infection. I had something wrong. And my doctor said, And he did agree. I had like a fever of 103. He said, there is something wrong with you, but I don't know what it is. And I would like to put you in the hospital, but I have to know, have to put something down to be able to put you in the hospital. I'm going to send you to get a CT scan. So I thought, well, okay. You know, I had to call Jerry to come and get me because I was, you know, I just was really sick. So I went for the CT scan, and we came back to the he came back to the doctor's office with me, and the doctor said, well, I'm going to have to send you to an oncologist. And Jerry was, I mean, I think, I don't know, for some reason, I was just accepting that what was coming more than he was. He was, it was very hard for him, but he said, you know, you've got lymphoma. And so I, we proceeded to go to the oncologist, a wonderful doctor. His ex-wife was in the program, so he understood about the program, and he was great. But at that time, you know, I just felt like, you know, I just said, you know, God, if you want to take me, I'm ready to go, but I'd like to stay to see my grandson grow up. And my grandson took it very hard. He, they told him. And would you believe the little fella, he was, that's been 3 years, so he was 10. They told him that, you know, I was sick. And he said, and they said, you know, there was going to be some changes for a while because he depended on me for, you know, I was taking care of everything, all his needs, whether he needed it or not, you know. So he said, does she have cancer? I mean, it just like intuitively he knew. And they said, well, yes, she does. They said he went into his room and he closed the door and he just cried and cried. And then he came out and said, Nene's going to be okay. And so that helped them too. But my doctor told me when I started the process of taking the chemo, he said, you know, if you keep a positive attitude, you'll get through this. And, you know, Jerry asked, you know, can it be cured? And he said, well, you know, I hope that, you know, I can put her in remission and eventually she will be cured. But I thought at that time, you know, it's a lot like Al-Anon. When people come in, if they keep a good attitude and try to work the program, they'll see the results of it. So it helped me, you know, to feel that way. And I tried to get it, keep a good attitude, except when he said to me after my first chemo, in 3 weeks your hair's going to come out. And I said, well, a lot of times people take chemo and their hair doesn't come out. I was like, you know, I'm arguing with him about it. And he said, well, no, your hair's going to come out in 3 weeks. Well, then I said to God, I said, God, if you will just not let my hair come out, I will, you know, and of course I was trying to make a deal with him. Or I said, you know, if you won't let me be sick, you know, then I'll give my hair up. Not that that would make any difference either. But anyway, in 3 weeks, it started coming out. So I just had my niece shave it. First, she made me a mohawk, and we took a picture. And then she shaved it, and we took a picture. And, you know, when I start saying I have a bad hair day, then I just look at that picture on my phone. And but, you know, after I got used to it, it was pretty easy. I would just, you know, wash my head and, you know, I didn't have to fix my hair. And it just cut a lot of time off of, you know, the situation for several months. But anyway, when I was in the hospital, right after I took my chemo and the doctor said the first one and the doctor told me my hair was going to come out, I had really two really good friends come and see me. And I said to them, you know, my hair's going to come out. Would y'all shave your heads to be supportive of it? And they, you know, that's the first time. I mean, they looked at each other like they were going to die. Because they said, you know, Jeanette's very sick. How can we tell her, no, we're not going to shave our head? And then my other really good friend said, well, I would have done it if you would have asked me to. Right. My sister did, though. She had her hair cut real, real short. Not all the way shaved her head. But anyway, we went through that real fire. You know, one of those fires, as Julie said last night. And we got through it. You know, I guess my faith in God and the realization that, you know, I just felt like my number was, you know, your number comes up and my number was up. And that how I dealt with it was how it was going to, you know, come out for me as far as going forward. So I did get through it. And I've been in remission like almost 3.5 years. So I'm very thankful. It gives you a different perspective on life when you come to that time. You know, you start looking at things a lot different and appreciating the small, you know, the very little things in life. But that grandson, I got to speak about him for a few minutes. He's 13 now, and he's spoiled rotten. Jerry, you know, I did a lot of it, I know. I never had any kids, and so, you know, I just lavished all my love and affection on him. And a lot of people say, well, I wish I'd had grandkids first because, you know, it's a lot different than having to raise kids. And so I did. I had my grandchild first. And he's not as, he's still needy when he's there. And he will be very easy to say, nay, nay, I need you. And, of course, those are the words that an Al-Anon loves to hear. I need you. And so I go running, you know. And there was times when I could not. And he would say, nay, nay, do you feel like getting this for me? You know, he's being as considerate as he can under the circumstances of being, you know, so spoiled. But he's grown up to be, he's growing up to be a good young man, and we're very thankful for him, and I'm still enjoying him. He doesn't like any affection shown in public now. When he comes in the house, he's taller than me now, or as tall as me, and I'll just say, you know, just give me a kiss. Very light when I get, very light. You know, I hope, will avoid the disease. But if he doesn't, I'm glad that I have Al-Anon. I know what I'm supposed to do. I hope I won't be that much of an enabler. I don't know, but I know that this program has taught me what I need to do, and I need to stay close to the program. A lot of people say, you know, your husband's been sober a long time. Why would you keep coming, you know? But I come for me, and that's what this program told me to come for. I'm here for me. And when we're in our meetings, we say, you know, we avoid all talk just to let y'all know about the alcoholic. We avoid talking about y'all, even though you think we're in there just talking about y'all. We're not. We are working on ourselves, and we're trying to do the best we can to deal with the situation. You know, my husband's been sober a long time, but he still has some time, you know, isms that come up. And so I just have to remind him it's not all about him. He doesn't have acceptable behavior, I have to tell him. You know, I still know that there are boundaries I have to put out there, and I have to try to live by those boundaries. But I'm just thankful for this program, and I'm thankful for all the friends that I have made all over the world, because we met lots of people when we were at the international convention from all over. Some of them we could communicate with and some we could not, but it was the you know, the heart is what we shared, our feelings from the heart of the program. And I'm just thankful that I have been able to come today, and the words came the way as best they can. I hope that somebody got a little bit of my experience, strength, and hope to take home. Because, you know, if you don't take anything else home, and we say this, we have a newcomers meeting the second Tuesday of the first Tuesday of every month in our group, and I chaired it the last time, and we had like half the room was the newcomers, and they didn't probably know it was a newcomers meeting because they had not come before to find that out. So it just so happened that there were all these people there. A lot of them were couples with kids, grown kids. But I just, the thing that you just have to share is there is hope. Hope is something that people are looking for when they come to the program, to find out that there is something, that they can get well, that they can find peace and serenity. So I will leave with the Al-Anon Declaration, and if anybody wants to join me, they can. And it goes like this. Whenever anyone, anywhere, is just out for hope, let the hand of Al-Anon and Al-Ateen always be there, and let it begin with me. And I thank you all. I love you, and I hope that I'll see you again. Maybe not up here talking, but but I love you all. Thank you.